It was time to rewrite his Nobel Prize acceptance speech. Speech rewriting was the last resort when no other distractions could hold Rodney's attention. For an introduction, he liked to cover recent events in his field, astrophysics or engineering, it didn't matter. When he ran out of notable achievements of his own, he touched upon those made by his friends. And because he was all for equality, he also had to mention the exceptional failures of his enemies. Rodney had plenty of enemies, all of them insufferable and moronic. There was never a shortage of new material to incorporate. He skipped the introduction this time and went straight for the punchline of the best joke he would ever tell. And that's how I turned my sophisticated radio telescope into a glorified answering machine. Cue laughter and applause. He wasn't sure yet how he was going to work Zelenka into this draft, a requirement of a bet he'd lost, but he was definitely going to mispronounce the asshole's name, because Zelenka had had the nerve not to answer Rodney's phone call this morning. Rodney didn't give a shit what time it was in Prague. Clutching a fresh cup of coffee, Rodney cruised past the control room and eyed his glorified answering machine balefully. His monitoring program was idle. Shepard had been silent since last night. That was pretty damn inconsiderate of Shepard, because here Rodney was, rested, as promised, charged like a capacitor with no outlet for his energy. Well, aside from writing his drafts in his head, while pacing and drumming his fingers against his thigh. He belatedly recognized the rhythm from a Grieg piano concerto. There wasn't even anyone in town he could drop by and annoy. Steve would be in the middle of a mail run. The bar didn't open until noon, and the last time he'd loitered in the cafe, the aging hippie who owned the place had pinned him with the evil eye, like she'd caught Rodney messing up her feng shui. Of course, that had been after he griped about the speed and security of her complimentary internet access. "Come on, John, give me something to do. You're killing me here." Rodney glared at the console. The console didn't love him anymore and refused to even blink any lights at him. "Fine, I'm going to go and read War and Peace," he threatened aloud. And when absolutely nothing intervened on his behalf, he was feeling perverse enough to stomp off and do exactly that. It was after lunch, and 17 agonizing pages, that Shepard finally let Rodney know he was still alive.
"Hey,"
he said. Rodney took his time wandering over to respond. "So, what's the plan?" Shepard must have been napping. His enunciation was even more haphazard than usual.
"Good afternoon, Rodney. Good afternoon to you, John. How are you?" "Been better. But nothing a gallon of hot coffee wouldn't fix. You?"
"Oh, I'm sorry. I figured you'd be anxious to start working on getting you back to civilization, if you'd prefer to chat instead."
"That's all right. It's just, you're an interesting guy sometimes."
Interesting, Rodney knew, was a blind date euphemism for strange as hell, but I decided to wait and ditch you after dinner because I'm hoping you'll pay. He heard it enough to have a standard response, which was to pretend he'd mistaken it for a compliment. "Thanks. Now, the plan?"
"Right. The plan."
"You're stalling. Tell me you have a plan."
"I have a plan, Rodney. I'm just
thinking about backing out, which you must know I won't let you do, so out with it."
"Okay, okay. Do you have something to write with?"
Yes, Rodney lied, scrambling for a pen and paper.
I need you to make a phone call for me.
Right, because I couldn't have done that days ago when I first offered. Rodney fumbled the pen just as he'd gotten a grip on it. Oh my God, you're serious.
McKay, you promised.
This isn't even your plan. If you were going to plagiarize someone else's plan, at least you could have picked a good one.
So, you admit your plan sucked.
It wasn't even worth being called a plan. It was barely one step in a greater plan.
Then, pretend this is step one and write down the damn instructions.
Shepherd's patience had apparently reached its limit. Rodney recalled that tone from way back on day one. It was Shepherd's military voice, brusque and bristling with authority. Writing. Rodney agreed hastily.
You need to speak to General Hammond. That's Hotel Alpha Mike Mike Oscar November Delta. He heads a division of the Air Force known as the SGC.
General Hammond, SGC, got it.
Now, this is extremely important. I'm going to give you my authentication code, which you are going to give to him only after he's verified his identity. Then, you are going to tell him everything you can about my status and location. And you're going to answer all of his questions truthfully and to the best of your abilities.
Rodney scribbled, because even though this sounded like common sense, he gathered that it was vitally important or something. Authentication code. Answer questions. I can do that. Got the number for me?
No.
No?
You're smart. Find it yourself.
Oh, I suppose SGC is right under Air Force. In the yellow pages. Shepherd growled.
If I could give you a number, I would. The problem is, I don't know how badly I've been compromised. I know who I can trust on base, but until you reach Hammond, I can't help you. You can't mention my name to anyone but him, or give my code to anyone but him. I can't afford to have you ringing in on a line that might link you to me. Is that clear?
Yes, Rodney stammered, because holy shit. Find a public number, bluff my way in. I should probably admit that social engineering was never my forte.
You can back out.
Shepherd relented.
I can't make you do this.
There's got to be another way. I know this guy. He's got a plane and he owes me a favor. We could fly out and, I don't know, circle around. You could light a big fire.
Good. If you didn't understand the risk, you wouldn't be frightened.
No, I don't think you understand the risk. I'm not exactly on the best of terms with the Air Force. If they even suspect I've been sniffing near their secrets, I'll be on a plane bound for the United States before the ink has dried on my extradition orders. The worst part was, that wasn't much of an exaggeration.
What?
Shepherd hissed. There wasn't as much ice in Antarctica as he managed to pack in that one tiny word. Rodney whimpered. Forget it. Because he already knew he was going to do what Shepherd asked, against all reason and common sense. And God, what was wrong with his mind? It was all a misunderstanding, I assure you. I'm incredibly paranoid. I'll take precautions, be discreet.
What kind of misunderstanding?
The kind where they might have made me an offer, and I might have been a little rude in turning them down. He winced. Then they might have pulled the plug on a project of mine, and I might have voiced complaints that might have been misconstrued as threats by someone who might have had their sense of humor surgically removed upon enlisting. But hey, look at it this way. I wouldn't have been given security clearance if they hadn't trusted me at the time, and I'm a coward at heart. I'd be running in the opposite direction if I didn't think I could do it. Shepard took a moment to digest all of that.
You sure?
Yes. Rodney had never been less sure of anything in his life. Shepard muttered something vehement, cutting himself off, and regrouped with a slow breath to try again.
If it goes bad, I'll do what I can to protect you. I'm not in a good position to protect anyone, not even myself, but I'll do what I can.
I know, Rodney said, because naturally Shepard was going to watch out for him. Just like he was going to risk his neck for Shepard. Total strangers did that kind of stuff for each other all the time. It made so much sense. Best case scenario, I pull this off and you get rescued and you owe me one, times infinity.
Worst case scenario?
Shepard prompted softly. I might be a genius, but my sense of self-preservation is defective as hell. It was only a matter of time before I accidentally removed myself from the gene pool. Say, can this wait until tomorrow? I need to do some research, make some arrangements. Write his will, find his passport, and book a flight to South America. I intend to make the call untraceable, but failing that, I'm going to make them work their asses off to find me.
Sure, buddy. Take whatever time you need. Another day or two eating bark won't kill me.
Even for a forced joke, it was terrible, but Rodney could appreciate the effort and sentiment behind it. Tomorrow morning, then. In the meantime, do you want me to, put on some music for you?
You can do that?
Sure. Worst that can happen, the CRTC catches me operating an illegal radio station and picks me up before the Air Force can.
Is that like the Canadian FCC?
Close enough.
Hey, instead of music, think you can see if there's a game on?
Oh, now you're pushing your luck. There were so many preparations to make that Rodney's brain overloaded and shut down. It was a defense mechanism, like snacking when he was nervous. And hey, look at that. He'd never been less surprised to glance down and discover his hand had acquired a bag of chips. Correction, a mostly empty bag of crumbs. He was in the kitchen hunting for a fresh bag when it occurred to him that it was supper time. Possibly the last supper he would ever eat before the black helicopters swooped in to take him away. His actual last supper. That was worth a trip into town. The bar served a half-decent steak and hadn't managed to poison him with lemon garnish yet. Alcohol sounded like a smashing idea. On his way out the door, he stopped by the console long enough to notice he'd missed a call from Zelenka. There was a game playing on the television above the bar, and Rodney felt a pang of guilt for not trying harder to meet Shepard's request. Oh, who was he fooling? He hadn't tried at all. He rerouted the system sound to the microphone input and set his playlist for random, and left Shepard to suffer the results. He hadn't been thinking about Shepard on what was possibly his last night as a free man. Then he wasn't thinking about Shepard, because Steve spotted him and took the fact that Rodney had a pulse as an invitation to slide into the opposite side of the booth and strike up a conversation. Steve stole steak fries from his plate and might have tried to play footsies a little under the table. Rodney might have let him, because Steve kept ordering Rodney more beer and hay last night as a free man. The game ended 20-17, but Rodney didn't catch the name of the winning team. He thought they were maybe the ones wearing red. Dr. McKay. Call me Rodney. Okay, Rodney. No, on second thought, I like the doctor. Steve couldn't mangle Rodney the way Shepherd could. Okay, doctor. Maybe just McKay. I think you should let me take you home. Nonsense, I'm fine. Because, really, what was the worst thing he could hit between the bar and his house? A moose? Those things were just as easy to hit, sober as drunk, and did just as much damage when they bounced off your hood and came through your windshield. At least let me take you to your car. Like Steve didn't already have Rodney by the elbow, propelling him for the door. Halfway across the parking lot, Rodney freed himself with a wobbly pirouette. He faced Steve and blurted, "You're trying to pick me up." 3 drinks earlier, this wouldn't have come as a revelation. 3 drinks earlier, he would have been able to keep his mouth shut. Steve scuffed in a rusted bottle cap with his boot and looked everywhere but at Rodney. So, is that a no? Yes, I mean, yes, it's a no. That is, now is like the worst possible time. I'm going to be up all night working on a very important project. He started patting down his pockets to locate his key. God, this is why I never drink. Never? But you just had... Rodney stabbed a finger at him, demanding silence. Ask me again when you can explain the difference between literal and rhetorical. Steve beamed. Okay, I'll look that up and call you maybe next week? Next week, peachy. Rodney agreed and trudged to his car. Poor Steve was going to be crushed when the black helicopters showed up to take Rodney away. Tripping up his steps and fumbling his keys in the dark, Rodney recalled another reason not to drink. He hadn't gotten around to installing motion-sensitive lights or that biometric lock for the front door. He left a trail, shoes, socks, pants, between the front hall and the bathroom. Then, after starting up coffee and swallowing 2 preemptive aspirins, he wandered to the control room to get down to business. Rodney had done some of his best work while devoid of pants. No joke. Settling in, he stared blankly at his array of monitors. Nope, not feeling it yet. The panic, the crush of a looming deadline. There was still ample opportunity for procrastination. He checked his email, which contained a gem from Zelenka. Tag, you're it. R. What time is it in Prague? Rodney concluded that he didn't care and dialed Zelenka's landline. A thick, groggy voice answered in Czech with what was either hello or do you have any fucking idea what time it is? Judging from the numbers of syllables, it was probably the latter. Get on your computer. This call is costing me like $10 a minute. Rodney snapped and hung up. Then he spammed the connection request button until Zelenka accepted 10 minutes later. Took you long enough. Consider your next words carefully, Radek warned, because the desire to hear that some disaster has befallen you is the only thing preventing me from returning to bed. I slept with Steve, Rodney said. You what? Okay, that's a lie, but it got your attention, didn't it? McKay, you're an ass. Rodney stuck his hand down his boxers, scratching an itch. Tell me something I don't know. A torrent of check ended with, I'm hanging up now. Wait, let me try again. If it's a disaster you want, I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Prison, Roddick growled. Explosion. Laboratory incident involving gamma rays.
Rodney was in the rip the band-aid off quickly and get it over with mood, so he launched into his explanation at full throttle. It works. The low-frequency antenna works. I can talk to Shepard, and Shepard can talk to me. He's the guy who crashed his whatever out in the woods, and he's been there for more than a week, and I finally convinced him that his would-be rescuers are incompetent, and I said that I would make the phone call for him.
Rodney, I swear, if this story doesn't end with you fleeing the country.
He threw down his trump. Shepard is Air Force, as in United States.
What? You can remember the international dialing code for Czech Republic, but not for the United States? I'll give you a hint. It's the same as Canada.
He wants me to call some big-wig general, Rodney tried, annoyed by Zelenka's bleak disregard for his safety.
Be polite, Zelenka suggested.
You just aren't getting it, are you?
Roddick groaned. I know there are hard feelings between you and the Air Force. I took that into consideration when I gave you my advice. It was sound advice, which you chose to ignore as usual. Now you are on your own.
Hard feelings? They threw me off my own project.
They offered you a permanent position, and you insulted them. Once my contract is finished, I'm done warring myself to the military. Those were your words, yes?
Close enough. Their offer was preposterous. They wanted me to sign away all my intellectual rights so that they could take my hard work and use it for their nefarious purposes without giving me any credit.
It didn't stop you from signing away your intellectual rights when you took the contract job.
Rodney sniffed. That was different.
How? I cannot wait to hear you rationalize this.
It was a one-time deal in a field I didn't give a shit about, and I needed the money.
You had reservations going into it, but you took it anyway,
Roddick corrected.
In case you hadn't noticed, I have a habit of making dire predictions about every aspect of my life. They're not going to come true.
They kicked you out. So what? They still paid you. As far as I'm concerned, you have nothing to whine about.
Whine? Rodney choked. They insinuated I played for the wrong team.
They said you aren't a team player. It wasn't a comment on your sexuality.
Says you. I know how it works. They have to beat around the bush because they can't make accusations openly.
There was a clatter that may or may not have been Raddick's head hitting his keyboard.
God in heaven, please tell me you didn't interrupt my sleep to rehash old arguments.
Rodney rolled his eyes.
Of course not. I interrupted your sleep because it's your job to talk me out of doing stupid things.
He glanced over at Shepard's instructions, picked up a pen, and doodled a little helicopter on the edge of the paper.
Rodney, right now I am praying for the Air Force to throw you in prison so I can go back to bed.
I'll name you as my accomplice when they do.
Naturally. What are friends for?
Roddick sighed, and hung up before Rodney could squeeze out another word. Rodney McKay, PhD twice over, was by no means an amateur researcher. Perhaps that was his problem. He hadn't stalked truly elusive information since his grad school crawls through esoteric academic databases. He'd grown soft in the private sector, where he had the luxury of handing off menial tasks to lackeys. That's what the nutty recluse gig lacked. Maybe it was time Rodney hired help. The advertisement would go something like this. World-renowned scientist seeks dedicated assistance. Must pass IQ test, working knowledge of spectrographs, and pressure washer required. Barista training is a plus. Hell, Shepherd should apply. They would be a perfect match. Rodney needed an assistant. Shepherd was going to be in need of a job when the Air Force fired him for crashing his thing. So, what if he didn't meet the qualifications? He demonstrated the ability to uphold his side of an intelligent conversation. That was a rare, innate gift. The rest of the crap could be learned. Rodney wondered what Shepherd's salary requirements would be. Was it possible to be fired from the Air Force? A certain Canadian genius had managed it, but that had been more of a working alongside situation. He was certain that Shepherd was in, as in dog tags and uniforms and yes sir, no sir, please may I have another sir. Rodney scrubbed his hands through his hair. Oh my God, what is wrong with my brain? It was only a few beers. Focus, focus. SGC. The SGC could go fuck itself. According to every online directory and military glossary and acronym database Rodney had queried, the SGC didn't exist. It gave a whole new meaning to the phrase unlisted number. Shepherd wouldn't lie, probably. Therefore, the SGC did exist. It was just so damn secret that... Wait. Wait. Rodney snapped his fingers, urging his brain to forget dog tags and uniforms for 5 seconds. Was that too much to ask? And concentrate. Yes. Wait. Almost? Yes. He hadn't done this in far too long. His methods were crap. His logic was lousy. Only a half-drunk idiot searched open public databases for a secret military project. It was just as likely to succeed as searching a police station for an escaped convict. An escaped convict would be paranoid. They would go to ground someplace private, quiet, and more than a touch disreputable. It was time to become reacquainted with the tinfoil hat brigade. His passwords had expired for the first 4 sites he tried. The 5th site had vanished off the net without a trace. It sometimes happened. One of the conspiracy nuts would disappear for a few months, then reappear with a new alias and a story involving hypnosis and subcutaneous transmitters and men in black. Rodney's foray into the lunatic fringe had not only taught him what a subcutaneous transmitter was, but also how to detect and disable one if he ever suspected he'd been implanted. Site number 6 hadn't been his first choice for a reason. Its definition of conspiracy was broad. Its collection was inclusive, borderline on indiscriminate. However, Rodney was in no position to argue with a working password. He pulled up the letter S and started scanning. 3/4 of the way down the page, between secret societies and shape-shifting alien reptiles, there it was. SGC. See also Stargate Command. Wow. What the hell was that supposed to be? A cross between Watergate and Star Wars? Whoever had coined it deserved to have their naming privileges revoked. Permanently. Rodney reread the utterly ludicrous description on the screen, then a 3rd time aloud because he sensed a pattern, a connection just beyond his grasp. Section of the U.S. military, salvaging alien artifacts, blah blah, headquarters beneath NORAD, in the Cheney Mountain Complex, blah blah. NORAD. That was the joint U.S. and Canadian airspace defense thing, wasn't it? Oh, hell. He just implicated Canada in a conspiracy involving alien artifacts and a secret lair buried beneath a mountain. What next? Bigfoot? Elvis? The Loch Ness Monster?
The connection, when it hit, nailed him like a punch in the gut. It sobered him just as effectively. He choked, arms failing as he almost tipped over his chair. Shepherd. Mountain. Shepherd calling the mountain. It was a pity Rodney didn't believe in coincidence, because the alternative was even more unsettling. Still coughing gently, he cracked his knuckles and hunkered down over his keyboard. Screw Zelenka. He didn't need Zelenka. He was fully capable of talking himself out of making suicidal phone calls to secret underground military bunkers. While he was at it, screw Shepherd too, and Shepherd's probably justified paranoia, and Shepherd's oh-so-specific instructions. When Meredith Rodney McKay's ass was on the line, Rodney's way was the only way. There was a new agenda, and the item at the top of the list was more information.
Morning, Rodney.
Shepherd hailed airily, like it wasn't close to noon, like Rodney hadn't been ignoring Shepherd's increasingly agitated messages for hours. Morning, John. Rodney had to consciously unclench his jaw to grind out the greeting. If John's your real name. Shepherd hesitated.
Has been since I was born. What's the matter with you?
Oh, I'm just reconsidering my decision to help you. I started thinking about it last night while I was researching your SGC, which, by the way, doesn't officially exist.
Well, my paychecks come from somewhere. Look, I knew it was a long shot, but I was betting on your genius to dig something up, not to imply you failed. It was really an impossible task, which just demonstrates the faith I have in you.
Shepherd reasoned. Rodney had to admit, he was good. Very, very good. Flattery with a touch of guilt and a hint of challenge. Even Zelenka had never managed to hit so many of Rodney's buttons with a single, delicate salvo. Shepherd wasn't just a lying son of a bitch. He was dangerous. Tempting as it is to let you stroke my ego some more, I think you should know that I'm onto you.
What? I wasn't...
Bottom line is, Rodney drawled, mocking the other man's lazy tone, I don't risk my ask for total strangers. Shepherd made a wounded sound.
Rodney, I'm hurt. After all the time we spent getting to know each other?
Who are you, really?
Major John Shepherd, United States Air Force.
Major, Rodney sneered. Congratulations on the promotion. Your obituary lists you as a captain. Shepherd's abrupt silence was every bit as satisfying and damning as Rodney had imagined it would be. You are betting on my genius, too. Dig something up? Well, records for active military personnel are classified, but I found John Shepherd's obituary in the newspaper.
Shit.
Shepherd strangled on the word. It's funny, because at first I assumed your signal had to be some sort of practical joke. Zelenka was the obvious culprit until I talked to him. He's an exceptionally poor liar and couldn't have sustained the ruse for more than 5 minutes.
Rodney.
Don't fucking Rodney me. I'm only talking to you because I want to know who's responsible. I mean, what man of my stature hasn't stepped on a few toes? Kavanov was seething for months after I got the promotion instead of him, and Lee still insists I incorporated some of his work when I applied for that patent, even though he was never able to prove it. But it never occurred to me that I might have enemies, actual enemies vindictive enough to stage such an elaborate... Shit, I don't even know what to call it.
Try the truth.
Rodney's momentum hadn't slowed. Want to know what frightens me the most? Whoever put you up to this knows way too much about me. They knew about the satellite dish that I take it down to clean every Thursday. They knew when to send your phony little signal so that I would pick it up. They knew I had a weakness for conspiracy theories. Knew my curiosity wouldn't be able to resist the bait. I almost... Do you know what would have happened to me if I had been stupid enough to harass the Air Force again?
Are you done?
No! Maybe. For now.
Good, because I don't want to be interrupted. When I'm finished, then you can tell me all about how you still don't believe me.
Fair enough.
Read it to me.
What?
My obituary. Read it to me.
He didn't need to find it again. The document was still open on one of his monitors. The shock of its discovery had been akin to stumbling upon a crime scene. He'd simply backed away, reluctant to touch anything until he had the chance to process the ramifications, which had first required sleep and a clear head. It says, Captain John F. Shepard, U.S. Air Force, age 35, was killed while flying a combat mission on November 17th. His helicopter was shot down near Kabul, Afghanistan.
Regrettably, his body was not recovered.
Shepard continued gently.
He is survived by his father, Patrick, and brother Dave, neither of whom have spoken to him in years. Despite their differences, Dave read a surprisingly heartfelt eulogy over an empty casket. Or so they tell me. It would have been a little awkward for me to turn up at my own funeral.
They buried an empty coffin. See, this is exactly what I was talking about. Everything is a conspiracy. No one can make up shit this good. You've got to be reading from a script.
No script. No lies. I guess you can say that I'm so deep undercover I don't exist anymore. And I absolutely regret the necessity of telling you, because the knowledge isn't safe for you to have. The Air Force is the least of your worries. There are other players you don't know about. Ruthless.
Will you drop the goddamn act long enough to tell me who put you up to this? Shepard's cool was fraying for the first time Rodney could recall.
No one put me up to anything. I am alone.
He gritted.
In the middle of the fucking wilderness, and I am going to die out here if I can't convince a petty, stubborn bastard to stop worrying about his own ass long enough to do something selfless and decent for once in his miserable life.
That's it. I'm calling the Mounties.
What would it take to convince you?
Shepard's anger deflated with an audible hiss of breath.
What can I give you? Tell me.
Proof. I want proof.
How? All I've got left are words, and you don't seem particularly inclined to believe a thing I say.
You've got that right, Rodney agreed bitterly. So much for their rapport. It had been just another of Shepard's lies. Shepard, God help him, was either desperate or doing a damn good job of faking it.
I could give you phone numbers, contacts, but you wouldn't be able to trust any of them. Anyone you call would only tell you exactly what you assume I want you to hear.
Correct. He left Shepherd to flounder alone. Rodney was through offering assistance to manipulative assholes masquerading as dead men.
Maybe you could contact someone and they could bring you some sort of tangible evidence.
No fucking way am I telling you where I live.
You could meet in a neutral location.
In other words, I walk into a trap? Is that what this is all about? Someone wants to kidnap me?
God damn it, McKay! Not everything is about you!
I disagree. This entire set of circumstances, the signal, your story, everything I researched, seems tailor-made to grab my attention and reel me in. I can't believe I was beginning to like you, he added viciously.
All according to my nefarious master plan.
It would have been a lovely, scathing retort if Shepherd hadn't sounded so weary. Of course, that was the point. Otherwise, it wouldn't be acting. Rodney crushed the bubble of sympathy that was forming in his chest until it was nothing but a dense, manageable ache. I can't believe I was so gullible. I mean, that part about your rescuers being able to find you was weak, very weak. And if you're so deep undercover, why the hell would you tell me your real name? Not that I believe it's really your name. You obviously stole it. My God, you stole Shepherd's life, right down to his fondness for Ferris wheels. He must have loved them a lot to include them in his obituary. Except nobody writes their own obituary, so it was probably one of those misunderstandings where you mention once that you like a certain thing, but people assume that that means you adore it, and pretty soon they're bringing you cat calendars and mugs with cats on them and stuffed cats to sit on your desk, and you can't refuse the crap because they're gifts, no matter that you're sick to death of... That was the problem with ranting. Rodney could only continue doing it while he had air. He gasped, refueling his lungs.
You're actually complaining about what I wrote in my obituary?
Shepherd said, incredulous. It's not yours. Everything I know about you is a fabrication based on someone else's...
I figured it out.
Shepherd interrupted. What?
I swear that once you get me out of here, I'll tell you everything. Everything about myself. Who I work for, what I was doing out here, the name of the girl I had a crush on in fifth grade. Hell, if you're dumb enough to want it, I'll tell you all the classified shit, too. I've got nothing to lose. This fiasco is going to put my career in a tailspin.
I'm not.
Yes, you are. Got a piece of paper? Write this down.
And damn the man. When he mustered that much quiet authority, Rodney was mobilized by an urge to obey. Hold on, damn it. Okay, ready. Shepherd rattled off a string of numbers and made Rodney repeat it back to him 3 times. Further instructions had to be forthcoming.
You claim to be so smart. Figure it out.
It's a server address, Rodney fumed. Just because I know what it is doesn't mean I know what to do with it.
Oh, I think you do. You can trace ownership on that server. You and I both know damn well that can't be faked. Go find your solid, tangible evidence, Rodney, and don't bother contacting me again until you're ready to help me.
You aren't listening to me. Why aren't you listening to me? For the last time.
Shepherd out.
Rodney tried to reestablish the connection. There was nothing more infuriating than being cut off in the middle of an argument. He was winning. He'd been on the brink of laying into Shepherd with a statistical analysis of exactly how unlikely Shepherd was to receive aid from Rodney in any form. but the link was dead, severed on Shepard's side, and no amount of shouting at the microphone or pounding on the console buttons could resurrect it. Rodney picked up the scrap of paper with Shepard's server address written on it and tore it to tiny pieces. The problem with John Shepard, well, in addition to the other problems too abundant to list, was that he was smart. Staring at the confetti littering his keyboard, Rodney realized why Shepard had made him repeat the server address so many times. Not to verify that Rodney had written it down correctly, but to make sure the number was seared onto Rodney's brain, where no amount of shredding could purge it. Fucking hell. Rodney had a stable of favorite proxies and a second string of less reliable ones he threw into the conga line when he was being exceptionally paranoid. It made his otherwise perky connection crawl like a slug. But such was the price for near-perfect online anonymity. After establishing the chain, he opened a fresh window and typed in Shepard's server address from memory. He let the blinking of the cursor mesmerize him while his finger hovered over the enter key. No, you know what? I'm not going to fall for this shit. Rodney jerked his hand away and flung himself out of his chair to pace. I can walk away from a challenge. Do you hear that, Shepard? Your pathetic little gambit isn't going to work because I do not feel compelled to solve every puzzle thrown at me. You're smart, but I'm smarter. Oh, and one more thing. I hope you die out there. Who was he kidding? Shepard? Rodney didn't know what else to call him. And sadly, the stolen monkier had already stuck. Wasn't in the woods. He was probably sitting in his basement, in front of a shortwave radio, eating cheese doodles and swilling beer. He was probably bald and unattractive, too, and still lived with his parents, and... shit. How was Rodney supposed to learn the name of the mastermind behind the plot if he never spoke to Shepard again? Failure wouldn't stop such a demented individual. At this very moment, they were doubtlessly devising an even more diabolical plot to destroy Rodney's life. He couldn't exist under the shadow of that kind of fear. In order to protect himself, he needed a name. And Shepard was going to give it to him. This has nothing to do with Shepard personally. Rodney would be happiest if he never had to hear the bastard mingle those two little syllables ever again. In the end, he left the cursor blinking on his screen, the server address waiting expectantly for the keystroke that would never come. His house had offered only temptation and irritation, while town had beckoned with supplies and destruction. Though, glancing down at the shopping bags he was carrying to his car, Rodney noticed he splurged on comfort food and wondered if the distraction part had succeeded after all. He caught sight of Steve, ducking into the library and almost followed until he remembered their conversation in the bar parking lot. Once Steve had his definitions, he'd turn to Rodney and request that strongly implied date. And Rodney knew he was in a precarious mental state. The shit with Shepard was lingering in his head like a bad breakup, which meant Rodney was on some sort of rebound. Oh God, he might be vulnerable enough to say yes, and that could not be allowed to happen. Rodney spun on a heel, doubling back to take a circuitous route to his car. Then he drove to a little field on the edge of town, got out and sat on his rear bumper, and tossed crumbled Pop-Tarts to some birds. Because really, even he knew the difference between comfort food and six boxes of Pop-Tarts.